Hallo, hier ist das Cool House. Nein, ich bin Cold Storage. Und ich begrüße Sie zu meinem Podcast-Interview mit Insert Moin. Leider ist mein Deutsch noch nicht ganz bereit für ein vollständiges Interview, aber vielleicht beim nächsten Mal? Na, wir werden sehen. Okay, ich wünsche Ihnen viel Spaß mit dem Podcast, so sehr es mir auch es machen gefallen hat. Und ja, ich bin sicher, dass Sie Pacer lieben werden und ich hoffe auch, dass Ihnen meine Musik im Spiel aufgefallen wird. Das ist alles. Liebe und Licht an Sie alle von Tim Wright alias Cold Storage. Tschüss, tschüss. Oder wie wir in der Schweiz sagen, Sali.
Insert Moin, ich bin der Micha und heute Morgen habe ich ein Interview für euch und zwar mit Tim Wright. Der ist unter dem Künstlernamen Cold Storage bekannt und hat die Musik zu Wipeout gemacht und zu vielen, vielen anderen Spielen, die früher unter dem Label von Psygnosis entstanden sind und deswegen eigentlich schon ein Urgestein in der Szene der Musikkomponisten, die speziell für Games komponieren. Und es kommt jetzt ein neues Spiel raus, das heißt Pacer. Das für den PC ist ja schon erschienen, für die Konsolen, für PS4 und für Xbox ist jetzt gerade so in der Warteschleife, soll jetzt irgendwann dieses Jahr noch erscheinen und das ist im Prinzip so etwas wie ein geistiger Nachfolger zu Wipeout, könnte man fast sagen. Also es ist auch so ein futuristisches Gleiterrennen, wo man sich auf extrem abgefahrenen achterbahnartigen Strecken halt auch Rennen liefert mit allerhand Waffen und all so ein Kram. Wenn ihr euch Bilder dazu anguckt und Gameplay-Footage, das sieht wirklich 1:1 wie Wipeout aus. Ist nicht offiziell von dem Team, aber das ist wirklich Wipeout im Geiste, auch wie die Dinger sich bewegen, wie die Steuerung aussieht und so. Ich und Manu sind ultra gespannt auf dieses Spiel, das werden wir hier auf jeden Fall bei Insert Moin besprechen. Aber es hat sich jetzt die Gelegenheit geboten, dass wir mit Tim Wright ein Interview führen und das ist ja super interessant, weil der Mann hat einfach schon viel erlebt und hat an vielen, vielen Sachen schon mitgearbeitet und ich wollte ihn, vor allen Dingen, weil ich selber Komponist bin, wollte ich wissen, wie ist seine Karriere verlaufen, wie ist er an die Jobs drangekommen, welche Erfahrungen hat er über die Jahre gemacht und so und vor allen Dingen, welche Veränderungen gab es so im Laufe der Zeit, also wie war das damals in den 90ern, Musik zu machen und wie ist das heute, also wie nimmt er diese Veränderung wahr? Ja, und das ist das, was jetzt kommt. Die Musik, die ihr ab und zu im Hintergrund hört, das ist Musik, die aus Pacer kommt. Das ist aus dem Soundtrack. Und ein paar von euch werden vielleicht die alten Wipeouts gespielt haben und denken, oh, okay, das kommt mir jetzt ziemlich bekannt vor. Und ja, so in die Richtung ist das jetzt auch. Und ich spiele das ab und zu mal für ein paar Sekunden ein, so dass ihr auch ein kleines bisschen einen Eindruck davon bekommt, wie die Musik jetzt im neuen Spiel klingt. Dann würde ich sagen, lasse ich euch mal auf dieses Interview los. Was ich noch sagen wollte, das führen wir auf Englisch. Tim lebt gerade in der Schweiz und lernt Deutsch, wie ihr in der Einleitung in einem kleinen Gruß am Anfang gehört habt, aber das wäre vielleicht ein bisschen zu anstrengend, damit jetzt ein ganzes Interview zu führen. Deswegen switchen wir hier auch zu Englisch. Okay, dann wünsche ich euch viel Spaß und dann, ja, hier ist das Interview mit Tim Wright. Okay, Tim, thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much for this opportunity. A lot of people, of course, know Wipeout and played the Wipeout games, but maybe they are not familiar with your music and your career. Maybe you can give us a quick introduction to yourself.
Wow. Okay. Like from the beginning.
Like music-wise, from maybe. Let's start with Wipeout. How did it came that you worked with Psygnosis back then?
Okay. Well, I guess we need a little bit of intro then. Always been keen on music. I was writing my own songs when I was like 3 or 4 years old. They weren't particularly great, but I had a little cassette recorder. And I would sing the songs into here and just make things up. Fast forward through lots of piano lessons, one or two bands with friends and colleagues. Through college, there was a couple of experimental periods. And I wrote some music on the Commodore VIC-20 and Commodore 64 during that period. Nothing great, just kind of experimenting. Mm. And then when the Commodore Amiga came, I just went, okay, you sound great, Commodore 64, but I'm sorry, this thing has 4 channels, sampled audio. Yeah. You know, my friend had an Emu sampler, which cost thousands, and the Amiga could do pretty much what this Emu sampler could do. So he actually bought one.
Did you work on tracker music and tracker programs on the Amiga?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the first tracker program that I used. It wasn't Noise Tracker, Pro Tracker, or Star Tracker, or any of those. But it was. I think it was one of the official, like, published music sequences. Mm. And it had like stave notation, musical notation that you could use. And although I could read because I'd done piano up to grade 5 in the UK. I'm not sure what that is internationally, but it's kind of the same that you would get if you were doing, you were like 15 or 16 in school, you were doing music and you passed that exam. It was up to that kind of level. Mm. So I used that for a little bit. And then, someone gave me one of the early Pro Trackers. And I was like, what the hell is this? It's like some kind of crazy spreadsheet. But then you think, no, it's like one of those like pianos with the paper that feeds through. So it's like a vertical thing. Yeah. So, I started playing with that using the original samples that came with it. The world famous ST00 and ST01 samples, and quickly got bored and thought, hey, I want new sounds. So bought myself a sampler, and then I was sampling everything and anything, kind of very like Art of Noise, you know, just banging things and so on. And then I found quite a few samples online. And of course you get the tracks that other people have written and you can borrow the samples. So there was a bit of that going on. Then I bought a synthesizer and then I could create my own sounds. So around about that time I was making okay music. So I sent out lots of demo tracks to various software companies. Mm. None of them said no. They were very polite. They just said, yeah, pretty good, but we don't need anybody right now.
The typical answer.
Exactly. We don't call us, we'll call you. So then I guess the big thing that changed was during the Commodore 64 days, I kind of got into the demo scene.
Mm, okay.
But not, very briefly as a contributor, but not really as a presence in the demo scene. And just by chance, I met some guys in a computer shop in Liverpool in the UK. Mm. And one thing led to another and we created a couple of music demos initially. And then we created the Pugs in Space demo, which did okay. It was with a lot of the sort of demo scene distributing companies and a few people were passing it around. And it was through that I got to meet the guys at Psygnosis. We went down to this computer show back in the early days when Psygnosis had like 7 or 8 people working for it. And we made appointments with all the big companies. Psygnosis was the last on the list and nobody really got the Pugsy demo. They didn't, like, what is a demo? Is this a game? No. Well, what are you showing us? Well, just our skills and a little story and just, no, they didn't get it. And we were really, we were in wearing suits. We'd really sort of put in the effort.
Yeah.
And Psygnosis were the last people. By this time we were depressed. So in all the other companies, you'd have an appointment, you'd turn up, you'd see the guys. And then with Psygnosis, they just said, okay, sit there. What have you got? Oh, we've got a demo we want to show. Is it on disc? Yeah. Give us the disc.
Yeah.
Okay. And they just walked away. And then we sat there going, did they just steal our disc? And then like 5 minutes later, the managing director called us in, sat us down at this big table, and he said, right, let's watch the demo with you guys here. So he played it again.
Yeah.
He said, this is amazing. This is what we need. This is what we want.
Awesome.
Something new, something fresh. So we're like, yeah. He says, where are you guys from? Liverpool. Well, that's friggin' nuts. You came all the way here and we're just down the road from you. Yeah, I know. Crazy. So yeah, so from that came the Pugs in Space game.
Yeah.
On Mega Drive and Amiga. And then the MD, Ian Hetherington, said to me, hey, you did the music and sound effects for this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got work for you. And I'm like, oh, okay.
This is cool.
Yeah, he said, "How will you do the music for Shadow of the Beast 2? And I was like,
yeah, mind exploding.
Going from nothing. Yeah. So that's how I got in the door with Psygnosis, partly working on the Pugsy game, partly doing extra audio for a lot of their Amiga games. Lemmings, awesome. And some like third party games for them as well.
I think this is the time where there'll be a lot of people recognize Psygnosis and your work, especially as super important for Psygnosis as in general, because they formed the industry right then. I mean, I think the Amiga games are super famous, like Lemmings and of course Shadow of the Beast. But you also got the impression that this was a time where a lot of video game companies were like pioneers, right? Like they were exploring new ground and trying out a lot of things, and Psygnosis stood out as these people tried out different art styles and music and so on. How did you feel like working on these games? Was this a big challenge did you have to adapt, or was it more like you added to the games on your own way and you formed these with your own style? Did you came up with new ideas for them, for example?
It was like kind of baptism by fire, because I'd written quite a few mods by that time, but nothing that had to be for a particular style or a particular game. The Pugsy demo was just like, if you watch that demo, the music's all like just different styles and kind of weird. So yeah, it really was like an opportunity for me to look at all these games that I was being given, talk to the producer, and then obviously talk to the team and kind of get their idea of what they wanted. There was a lot of control in the hands of the team. They were the creative center. So I don't think I was ever in a position where anybody at Psygnosis said, yeah, that's not the style of music we want. The team is wrong. You should be doing rock music. Ignore them. It was very much a case of these kids know what they're doing. So just let them get on with it. And then obviously you bring the game in, you play it. And if everybody's having fun and the testers are having fun, you know, it's just approved. So from that perspective, it was really good. There was no micromanagement. But yeah, in terms of the style and the approach, there was always the fight, and there were two problems back in those days. The team would work on a game, they'd bring it up to a certain level. It would be, you could demonstrate it to Psygnosis. They would say, yeah, this is really great, but you have to have a body of work there that they knew you could finish the game. So then they'd say, do a bit more. And then either when it's complete or when it's really close to the end, they'd say, okay, your sound effects suck or they're missing. and either there's no music or, you know, it's kind of basic. So then that's where they would say, you know, we've got a guy. And then you'd be introduced at that point. So it would be pretty close to the end. Lemmings was insane because obviously that was a problem with copyright issues. A lot of the songs were just cover versions of famous TV and film music. So they were like, okay, you've got, I can't remember how long it was, maybe like a week or two weeks to replace all of these songs.
Yeah,
I think it turned out in the end there was a bit more time than that. But yeah, with others like Shadow of the Beast 2, that wasn't so bad because there's Shadow of the Beast 1 to listen to, David Whittaker's work. And the guys there were very specific. I mean, so crazy specific. They said, do you have a Korg M1? No. Can you get access to one? Yeah, my friend has one. Okay. Patch number 43, 76, 29. Sample all of these. What you do with them is up to you, but those are the good ones. Those are the kind of sounds we want to be hearing.
Yeah.
And then even to the point of when you die, this is the music I want. And there's a cassette that he sends me with this music on that sounds like it's kind of a little bit cheesy guitar synth. And I'm thinking, oh, he's clearly made this, but he wants it Amiga-ized.
Yeah.
So I copied that. Turns out it was actually written by a guy also called Tim, but was in a scene in Miami Vice.
Yeah.
Kind of semi-famous. So I didn't know that. So like years later, there was this like, Tim Wright ripped off, I forget his surname, Tim, oh, whoever shit, he yeah. is from Miami Vice. I'm like, no, I have a cassette here. It wasn't me. You know, I didn't even know this music existed. So yeah, that was very specific. But then like the same company, they did Awesome.
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't know if you know it, it's a big ship on the screen and you're shooting a lot of asteroids and then you go down to the planet and all this kind of thing. No guide at all. Just go for it. Be, you know, go crazy, write whatever you want. So I think I was lucky that the first one was Shadow of the Beast. Although Awesome came out and then Shadow of the Beast came out. So they kind of, I did them the other way around. But
yeah.
It was a good like hand-holding session.
How was the situation on Wipeout then? So because a lot of people recognize you as Cold Storage from Wipeout. And so Wipeout had this futuristic style. That definitely defined the overall genre of futuristic racing games for a long time. So there, after Wipeout came out, a lot of games looked like Wipeout, and a lot of games were super inspired. And the game we're talking later today, Pacer, of course, is inspired by Wipeout. But I think the impact of this game and the series in particular, I don't think you can't. This is something everybody recognizes. But how about the music? How was the approach to this? Did you had all the control you wanted, or was this like, okay, this is a science fiction game, make techno music?
I guess I best address that by the fact that I work on a lot of Amiga games. I work on some other console games. Mm. I eventually come to work in-house as a paid musician, full-time musician. So this all happens fairly quickly over a period of like a couple of years. Sony buys Psygnosis because they're looking for a UK company to develop software for the PlayStation. Obviously, they like the fact that Psygnosis concentrated quite heavily on artwork, presentation, technical feats. Maybe some of the games weren't as playable, but they looked really, really nice, real ear and eye candy. So I think at the point where Sony got involved and we were tasked with producing the first few games, I had, before Wipeout, there was Crazy Ivan, which actually may have come out after Wipeout again, kind of weird.
Yeah.
This was kind of the first real project where I had just CD audio. So I was creating real, because it's lots of robots, giant robots fighting, a bit like Pacific Rim, that kind of thing.
Cool. It
was like sort of 9-inch nails, all the kind of industrial sounds. That was kind of the backstory to my music.
Mm.
So I was recording lots of shortwave radio transmissions, trying to find some really hard-hitting and heavily compressed sounds.
Cool.
So
yeah.
I was composing this for, must have been, I guess, a couple of months, really getting into it, had expanded all my music gear. So all the tools were there to do this. And then towards the end of this, Nick Burkham, one of the designers on Wipeout, came to me and said, okay, we'd like you to start putting some tunes together for this new game. Showed me a video. Okay, racing game, but in like hovercraft or something, but really fast. Okay, yeah, no problem. So I finished the Crazy Ivan, then I started writing a new song, which is a little bit faster paced, but still had the kind of industrial sound. And he came in, listened, and he goes, yeah, good track, but not really Wipeout, not suitable. Oh, okay. Let me play you some songs. So he played a load of trance, some techno, a few different bands that, you know, he was thinking, you know, this is the good direction to go in. And then there was like a break. There was like a hiatus where we had to move to this cool, sexy new building where we had purpose-built audio studios. And then by the time that was all finished, the game was getting to a reasonable stage where you could play it, and then I could start writing the music again. But the deadline by this time was looming. There was like 2-3 weeks where they wanted to hopefully get it all kind of finished. Okay. And they were also talking to licensed musicians, you know, to get them involved. So yeah, I'm thinking he didn't like my first track. So let's see what I can do. So I kind of immersed myself a little bit in that kind of music, which I hated.
Really? It wasn't your
hated,
thing.
Yeah. I hated trance. I hated techno. I hated all of that. The closest you could say I got to that, I was a big 80s head.
Yeah.
So I liked synthesizers. I liked Howard Jones, Nick Kershaw, Depeche Mode, Yazoo, or Yaz, I think they were called outside of the UK.
Yeah.
But it's very pop and 80s and lots of melodies and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So he wants me to write...
This is amazing.
It's yeah, just yeah, like, oh, yeah. Why would anybody listen to this shit? It's just like, whoa, 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 whoa. And he said, you don't get it, man. You don't get it. I said, I don't get it. It's just like changing a filter.
for
an hour. So he said, right, that's it. I'm taking you out to a nightclub. So Nick and one of the female artists and a couple of other guys, we go to a nightclub. There was no drinking of alcohol, just water. And there was no consumption of drugs or anything. Well, I didn't. And so I'm there for like, I don't know, an hour or so. And then I started to get it because I'm like dancing away and I'm thinking, this is why they call it dance music. Because you dance to it. You don't. Once you've danced to it and you love it, then you can listen to it and relive the memories or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I get it now. And he's like, okay, I'll leave you alone. I'll come back. Have some more experiments. So at the time, there was also money to be spent on sample CDs.
Yeah.
So I got Time and Space, Volume 1 and Volume 2, I think. You can't get them anymore. They were full of copyrighted samples. They'd just gone crazy and sampled everyone. So, yeah, I'm happy this didn't cause any problems for Psygnosis anyway. But so I went through these sample CDs and I got some nice beats, a few bass lines, and then kind of speeded them up and slowed them down to fit a certain tempo.
Yeah.
Added my own synthesizer kind of sounds and melodies. And then if you listen to the music from the original Wipeout, they're all really fast because I was shitting myself because... Part of my brain is going, you just have to be sticking to just like, bro, 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 you know, kind of simple melodies.
Yeah, yeah.
So I started doing that and it sounded really boring and it wasn't going anywhere. So crank up the BPM a little to try and disguise the fact that these songs went interesting. And then I thought, screw it, I can't do this. Did it, and started putting melodies in. And then, so I'd do a few bars with melodies, and then I'd think, where do I go now? This is boring. I start another melody with some more rhythms. So different rhythm comes in, different melody. Okay, now I can go back to the first one. So, and so that's a lot of the songs. They're very fast. They have like about 7 songs in one. There's always like this melody, then this melody, then a break, then this melody. And I was trying to write them really quickly. And I have to give like a little nod to Red Bull because they delivered cans and cans of this Red Bull for free. And I picked them up and went, fruit drink. That tastes really nice.
Mm.
So I drank like 6 of them in a row and they're full of caffeine. So I didn't know this at the time. So I'm like, I'm grinding my teeth and I'm thumping the desk going, yeah. It was a bizarre situation where I kind of didn't like what I was doing, but then I got into it and I appreciated the music, but was scared that I wasn't writing it correctly. So it was a weird mishmash, a weird blend of all of this fear and Red Bull and fighting techno and trance. And so it's a real kind of crazy.
Yeah, this is really, 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 really cool. Super interesting story because I didn't know that you really disliked electronic dance music at first. This is amazing to me because a lot of people are like recognized by what because of the music and because of the. But I think it's the melodies. This is what I wanted to ask. What you think makes these tracks special? So people recognize Wipeout not because of the club music that is going on for 5 minutes and basically changing the filter, like you said, but there's a lot of melodic elements. And I know a lot of people who are not at EDM, at electronic dance music at all. They're like, I don't listen to this, but they put in Wipeout and they have an amazing time also because of the music. So people who are even not into all of this electronic stuff, they won't even go into a club, they still enjoy Wipeout. So why do you think that is, especially in the Wipeout, also in your music? Is it because of the melodies? Is it because it's, why is it more approachable than other electronic music?
Yeah, I honestly believe that is it. Because if I say to somebody, oh, I wrote the music for Wipeout, and they go, oh, all of it. I said, no, but, I contributed a lot to the beginning and then some less towards the end because a lot of licensed acts wanted to get a little slice of the action. And they said, oh, like, which one did you write? And I said, I love that one. Or, oh, yeah, I like that one as well. So I think it is, there's that recognizable melody. Mm-hmm. And there are so many, like, there's like three or four in each song. So it's a little earworm, a little hook. And I think with a lot of techno or dance music, well, certainly trance techno, there isn't that necessarily that melody, but there is a lot more of that in kind of like the, like early 20s Ibiza sounds where they have that little, that it'll introduce the song. Then there'll be a like, and people recognize that piano melody.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's definitely, it's that, but also there's a lot of variety and it's fast paced and kind of naive, very naive, because I listen to it now and it's just like, ah, man, cut the hi-hats there a little bit, at least introduce the next bit of rhythm. But I didn't. I just went,
This is, this is interesting, because the new tracks, now we can move on to Pacer. And of course, when I first saw gameplay of Pacer, I was like, okay, this could be the next Wipeout game. This is basically very much got the philosophy of Wipeout in gameplay-wise, design-wise. It got its own twist with the atmosphere and so on, but it really reminds of that. And then I read your name in the composer's list and I was like, okay, they're going full Wipeout. This is... no doubt they wanted something like this. Sony isn't doing it. These guys are doing it. And when I listen to your tracks, these are amazing, by the way. I got the same impression. You got all these melodies and you got there's a distinct feel about it. I'm trying to get a hold on. I'm trying to grasp how to describe this. This is futuristic in a way, industrial in a way, but also very... fast moving forward. There's also this sense of speed in it and also this sensation of, okay, there's a bright future ahead. It's not this dystopic kind of sound. You get, like, you mentioned Nine Inch Nails before. Nine Inch Nails, you listen to it and you think the world is burning. World is on fire. This is, it's like playing Quake, of course, and has this very dark sound, but your sound is more bright and optimistic. And I think this is something a lot of people associate with the 90s, with the electronic music of the 90s, because back then, especially in Germany, electronic music was like more the happy vibe. There were bands like Dune and Das Modul and Blümchen. I don't know how she's called in English, I'm not sure, but it's this happy hardcore vibes and so on. It's more like we got the feeling of, do we have a bright future ahead? Before the 2000s came. And how do you feel about that? Is this something, during working on this kind of music, some kind of time travel for you also? Is this something you think, like, okay, remembering better times?
There were a few kind of mental decisions, some direction that I wanted to take when I was asked to write the music for Pacer, or Formula Fusion as it was called, which it's like going back to 2015 now, the original. I wrote two tracks at the time. I wrote the first track, and Andrew, the guy that was got me involved at that time, he was like, I really like the track, but it's kind of, it's not exactly what I was hoping for, maybe a little bit harder edged or whatever. So I went in that direction and he's like, yeah, I like that second one. Yeah. I said, hey man, you can keep both if you want. He said, well, that's very kind. Maybe we just use the one, but I said, okay. then there was a big gap. Like it was a done deal. And then, it was John Purdy got in touch with me and said, Andrew's not here. We're going to take over. We want to sort of expand on the whole thing. We'd like you to write some more music. I said, oh, okay. How much? Oh, as much awesome. As you like loads of tracks. I'm like, wow, okay. So we ironed out the deal. I said, what about the, I wrote one, well, actually two tracks. Oh, okay, yeah. Well, we knew there was one, so they listened to the other one. And they said, yeah, these are great. And I said, okay, but it's been a few years. Let me give them an extra little sort of lick of paint and just a bit of extra production. So I did that. And once I'd done that, I thought, okay, I saw where it was going, where they wanted to take it. And on the one hand, it was very Wipeout-esque. From the start, they wanted it to be like an unofficial kind of successor or destination for people that are really into that kind of game. Hence, you know, Designers Republic, me and anybody else that they could get to sort of inject some of that into it. And I thought, wow, it's looking a lot different to when I saw it last. Looks really cool. But part of me was thinking I shouldn't really do Wipeout music exactly. It should be a slightly different take. So it's still futuristic racer, it's still that anti-gravity vibe, it's still Cold Storage. So if you listen to this, you think, oh yeah, that's one of his tracks. But not have that original naivety, you know, with the hundreds of melodies and the crazy beats and everything. And in between doing Wipeout and Wipeout 2097, a couple of tracks, and then the PlayStation Portable, PSP, there was the version on there. So I contributed one track to that called Onyx, which a lot of people like, again, for the same reasons that you just kind of raised, which is it's very upbeat. It's like, it's got that futuristic vibe, but it's very upbeat and it's emotionally just uplifting. It's got these high soaring melodies with lots of reverb, and you know, it's meant to make you feel good. So it's meant to make you feel that you are in the right place. You're racing. You're in this ship. You're going to win. It's a foregone conclusion. The other people racing, they're not hearing this. You are. We already know you're going to win. That kind of vibe. So wanted to carry that vibe across with the music for Pacer. But in between, yeah, I did music for a game that was anti-gravity called Sodium 2, which is on PlayStation Home.
Yeah.
I did like five or six tracks for that and then created an album around it with the stupid name of 6E6132 or something, which is Na2 in ASCII, which is Sodium 2. So that's it's got the weird. Yeah. Cool. But that was a lot darker. It was a lot like in your face, almost like if you don't win this race, are going to punch you. You know, it was like kind of aggressive music. So then it was, okay, well, let's go back to the whole nice Wipeout, good vibes, but don't go crazy with all the melodies. Just, you know, have one theme, but you have to feel it in your chest. It's uplifting. So that's the driving force, I think.
I think the Pacer tracks also sound more open, how to describe. I think there's a more emphasis on synthesizing, like more melodic spheres, and there's a bigger soundscape. When listening to it, and closing my eyes, I imagine a big horizon moving forwards to the horizon, to the sun. This is something I get. Well, you're right. So Wipeout is more this nightclub feel. I think this is also because of the tracks. The tracks got more of this more closed, dense design feel, a bit more claustrophobic. Especially in the later Wipeouts, it's more like you're driving all through tunnels and stuff like that. And from the gameplay I've seen on Pacer, I think it's more open. There's always this open air kind of feel. There's a lot of nature in the background and so on. I think this reflects in the music quite well.
Yeah, I was very careful to have the video of it. It was earlier days, so there wasn't an awful lot on YouTube in terms of playthrough. But I managed to find a couple of playthroughs, and I would turn off the sound and just play my music and watch, you know, the gameplay.
Yeah.
And I went through a few iterations where I'm like, no, that's not really the vibe that I would want to feel while I'm playing it. So I did actually, you know, take that into account. And then a little bit later, after the music was done, the same kind of thing with the sound effects, because they asked me to get involved with this as well. Me and this other guy called Stafford Baller. So I worked with him for a bit and then kind of handed over to him. So we built up the engine sounds and a few of the effects and stuff. And I said, okay, there's a template and now you can kind of work with it. So I think they were happy to get the insight from the game engine sounds from Wipeout, where I'd gone through all the agony of nice big jet engine, you know, like the bass, you know, kind of like shaking the table, and you think, this is wrong. There's no room for the music. It's just this grinding, howling thing going along. And then you finally work out that actually all you need is just like this kind of high-pitched thing and a little bit of a whining noise. So you end up with an engine that's like four or five different layers all doing different things.
Yeah.
So once this was done and we had a good body of sound effects, then we could do some more playthroughs, and then I could put my music over the top of this just to make sure that everything kind of had its own space.
Connection was breaking up, but I wanted to say it's quite the opposite to the episode one racing game. Do you know that? Where like you have the classical Star Wars music in the background and it's always like the engine sounds is super loud. It's like you got these two bass engines like in the movie in the foreground, and it's always like this jet sound. And this is something I really appreciated about the Wipeout games, and also looking forward to M-Pesa, because the music is basically very present. You don't want to listen to the jet sound all the time. It's good that it's there and that you're recognizing, okay, these are jet sounds, it's cool. But the more interesting part, I think, is, of course, the music. And wise decision. Thank you.
Yeah, it makes sense because, you know, as you're playing it, you're thinking, what's wrong here? And then you quickly work up what it is. You still want the percussive sounds. So you hit the wall. This needs to be like really bang. You get a speed boost or an explosion. This can take up a big chunk of the soundscape. I know what you mean with the Star Wars stuff. You know, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's there all the time.
Yeah, that's right. I think it doesn't work in a different way in the case of Star Wars, of course, because this is the trademark of Star Wars. But this is so different. There are two futuristic games, but Star Wars has this its own unique style. This is coming to mind. But yeah, I wanted to ask, it was one of my last questions actually, but I wanted to ask the approach you explained at the beginning. You work on trackers and you sampled your own sounds, and this was a very experimental time where people were also figuring out a lot of stuff with the music gear. And I feel like also doing music myself, and I feel like a lot has changed during the past 20, 30 years in terms of electronic music production. There's you got sample libraries. You can basically put your own orchestra, perfectly recorded orchestra, into your home studio. And a lot of, especially electronic instruments, are making things a lot of easier. But do you think at the same time that this process of music making does also affect the music in a way that it isn't less creative than in the 90s, for example?
I think what it means is the playing field that you're on. Back in the day when you had to create everything yourself, you would have some really awful music.
Yeah.
created by people that had the enthusiasm, but in terms of, I guess, like everything is a perceived beauty, you know.
Yeah.
You get people that see somebody that has like loads of tattoos and piercings and stuff, and some people are like, wow, you know, that person's really hot. And other people are like, are you crazy? So, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and the same is for music. So whatever you're producing, it's your baby. And if you're getting some enjoyment out of it, then that's all that matters. If there's a very select audience for it, because it's not, you know, it's not something that's kind of hitting the mark right now. Fast wind 20 years, maybe it's all the rage and everybody's loving it. Who knows? I mean, there are certain things melodically, clashing notes, playing key songs in the wrong key.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, these are fundamental things that if you do them occasionally, they can be clever. But if you really just don't get it. So I think it's removed that aspect. So if everything is just sampled snippets, so you get nice rhythm, bass going, melody, everything's in the key of C or E or D or whatever. And then you're becoming a producer or a remixer, essentially. Which, again, is another skill altogether. You can have all these amazing clips, but if you don't know how to order them and how to not go crazy and have breaks and fills and all the kind of things that make a good musical narrative, it's still going to sound kind of well-produced. Yeah, yeah. The levels will be okay, but it will be bizarre or boring or whatever. It won't have a narrative. I mean, I'm kind of partially responsible myself for bringing this forward, because as well as the Cold Storage and the Tim Wright, there's also the music for PlayStation, EJ. These are all things that I ended up working on and creating for PlayStation and PC and Game Boy and just all different platforms, because it was something I wanted to bring to people. Because when I was a kid, way, way back, when there were dinosaurs and shit, you know, the guy with the 4-track tape recorder that his dad got him for like £800 in the UK was the king. Hey, can I use your 4-track recorder? No. Oh, go on then, for an hour. You know, so when it got to the point where there was a console in your house that could do 16 channels of sampled audio, why shouldn't everyone have a 16-channel sequencer? So you know, so I think it's definitely changed the speed, the flavor, and the number of people that can get into it. Because if you've got a cheap laptop, any kind of cheap sequencing or even free sequencing software, and you can just go online to a library and pay like, I don't know, $20 and get 1,000 samples. In theory, everyone can now make music. So it's there's like a glass ceiling you have to try and break out of now, which is even higher, to have someone kind of recognize that, hey, this guy, he's got something. He's got a different something that I'd like to listen to his music. You know, you need extra little secret sauce. So yeah, even though more people are making music, it's I think it's got harder. Not easier.
So it's access
to start, but it's harder to break through.
The access to the tools is definitely way easier. It's like, which is a good thing, because a lot of people in the past didn't have the talent, but not the access to all these tools and all the stuff, because it costs a lot of money. I think it's a good thing, but at the same time, there's a lot of very samey stuff. There's a lot of stuff, like you said, that sounds like it has this base level of sound, so it sounds okay. It's perfectly usable in certain occasions, but to stand out is way more difficult. And I think back then, when you only had your analog tools, your tape recorder, and your samplers and so on, I think every piece, even if it didn't sound that great, is your own piece, is your own creation. It's my sounds I did record, and it's my sound, it's my crappy tape recording sound I did. It's also, when I recorded something from the radio, this was me at that time with this crappy radio connection that did this specific sound with all the noise in the background. And I think something of this kind of got lost over the years, but I feel there's a movement of people who like to try to get back to this, who use the modern tools, like all the mixing stuff you got, all the producing stuff, but also try to incorporate these old school elements to get to say like, okay, I need to add something that's my own, and they get back to chip tunes, for example, or to other things they recorded themselves. And this is why I'm asking, because I remember a time in Germany when there were bands like R&B or Westbam or so on, they were all recording all their own stuff. So when people went to Mayday, for example, or to all the other festivals, they were like, everybody got a very different sound. And this is something that I kind of miss today.
Also the industry has become very fragmented, which again is a good and a bad thing. So you have a lot of disparate, a lot of different styles, people writing all kinds of music. The internet means that you go to YouTube and you can search for any kind of weird music, all kinds of mixes and blends and stuff. So it's not the case that you have the traditional music industry. There is rock, there is pop, there's jazz, there's R&B, and you have to fit into these categories if you want to be heard. And you have to go to the music shop and get the CD or the vinyl or the tape, and everybody else is screwed. They have to just go play live, build up a fan base. So now everyone can create music. Everyone has a platform. It's not expensive. Just throw it on YouTube, SoundCloud, wherever you want to put it. If you have a few extra pounds, create your own website. So it literally is a massive marketplace for any kind of music, and everyone can get to hear it. But I think it's narrowed in terms of who is on what is left of the radio, TV, and so on, and who is getting selected to feature in films for background music. It's kind of solidified down into this machine that produces certain genres even tighter. Because if you, for instance, in the UK, we had a program called Top of the Pops. And if you watch this program, that on YouTube, you can see old recordings of Top of the Pops. And it's such a crazy smorgasbord of different bands and different musical styles, and even some experimental stuff coming in and actually getting into the charts. So, yeah, it's you look at the charts now such that it is, it's very crystallized down to what is going to sell. And then if one person does something, like, for instance, that kind of high-pitched, high-sampled, hi, ooh, like little female high parts that they will put in between. That's just one example. Before this, it was vocoding. So there's always flavor of the month. And everybody, as soon as there's a track that has that little element, they steal it. So it's, you know, the variety is gone.
Yeah. That's right. But I don't want to end this interview on a pessimistic note. After all...
Oh, God, no. Let's not.
No. After all, there's a lot of... I think because of this, there's a lot of super amazing musicians out there who didn't have a chance 15 or 20 years ago, to get in the industry, because the industry was there. They had these gatekeepers. They're like, okay, this is something we can sell. We can make a music out of this. And nowadays it's like, okay, your song can go viral. Like you can do something completely different. And there's quite famous examples like Billie Eilish, for example. I think everybody knows Billie Eilish. She did a demo song and never thought that this would be something special. She just uploaded it on SoundCloud for friends to listen to it and so on, and it blew up. It was like everybody loved it, and this is how she got encouraged with her brother to do the music she's doing today, and a lot of people like it. And I think a person like Billie Eilish and a lot of other artists didn't have the chance a few years back, maybe. So it can be. So I don't want it to end on a pessimistic note. But the approach to producing music is, I think, is so different now, right now, that it really changes. Also, some kind of changes the sound. And I think a lot of people are getting into this. I think the variety. I think I agree. I definitely agree with you there. So yeah.
Well, we can end on a positive. I can give you another positive. So please, a little while back. Not so long ago, I thought it was one of those moments where you think, am I actually any good? I've been lucky. I've been on some games, but am I now burnt out? Is like my heyday was in the past, and my future is just like me repeating myself, and maybe I'm getting older and I haven't got the spark and so on. So yeah, it was a bit. So this is a downer moment, but out of this came, okay, I'm going to try an experiment here. At two locations. So I created this new band called Orange Goes Pop.
Nice.
And I thought I will do a style that's kind of chiptune influenced, but with some singing over the top, because chiptune was kind of coming back in a little bit. So I did this. I created a few songs. I set up a Twitter page, website, the whole thing, so it looked real. Even the names of the people. So, yeah. And they were all anagrams of Cold Storage, which is kind of funny. I thought it was.
Nice.
Largo Costed was the main guy of the band.
Yeah.
And also they had a female singer. I can't remember her name, but again, it was like a cold storage anagram. So then I posted these to Vince Clark of Erasure on Twitter. And one of the guys from Heaven 17, a different track, and just said, hey, we're a new band just starting out. What do you think? So Vince Clark replied, oh, wow, this is really cool. It reminds me of such and such a band. Yeah, nice track, man. And then the guy from Heaven 17 says, oh, yeah, this is really cool. I'm liking it. So I thought, okay, well, that's a nice experiment. So the second location, I went to a demo scene party in the UK as the headliner. I did the video was on YouTube somewhere. I did this, I think it was called Sundown. And I played a load of my tracks, some Amiga stuff, some Wipeout stuff on keyboards. And that went down really well. Had some good laughs as well. And I entered the competition for, I think it was just like freeform music. So didn't have to be on a platform like Amiga or 64 or whatever. And I entered this as Orange Ghost Pop. And oh no, it was Sunrise. That's what it was called, not Sundown, Sunrise. So I entered this song called Sunrise as Orange Ghost Pop and sent them the lyrics as well. So they were like, they played the lyrics and some guy was pointing at the lyrics with the mouse bouncing along. And I think I got third place or second or third place.
Awesome.
So then I said to the guy afterwards, hey, you know the Orange Ghost Pop guys? Yeah. Do you know them? I said, yeah, it's me. And he went, ah, okay. So yeah, and I think that proved, apart from proving to myself that it wasn't a fluke, that there must be something that I'm doing that's okay, I think it proves that if anyone has got like some talent, and this is making me sound big-headed now, but you know what I mean? They can write music that people want to listen to. Let's put it that way. They can do it. You just have to, I think the secret is to get out there, just like keep pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. I think it's still, this is an upbeat. It's still possible. Even in this day and age, if you've got something original to say or to sing, I think you just have to believe in yourself and keep pushing.
It's like, it's such a huge world out there, right? It's like there are so many people out there with so many different tastes and so many different experiences, and also with different kind of ways they approach music. And if you got an idea for music, there's an audience for you somewhere out there. Yeah. And I think this is something really cool that happened over the past years, also thanks to the internet. 30 years ago, maybe some friends would listen to your demo tape and say like, yeah, that's nice. And then you got feedback from two or three people and your mom, of course. But that's it. But the thing is that nowadays you can have, maybe you're not getting famous or something or get rich by it, but you can get feedback from hundreds of people who are just listening to you. Just uploaded it to SoundCloud and take it the right way, like with all the right stuff, so that people can find you. But it's possible today, and I think this is something beautiful. I love, for example, I love Bandcamp. I love browsing Bandcamp and looking for stuff and see at the recommendations and so on, because there's a lot of musicians that are very unknown, and of course a lot of video game composers. Amazing video game composers, where I think, man, if I would have a label, I would put them on vinyl or something. And this is, I think this is really, really cool. I think it's a positive thing how it changed. So, and
yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, Tim, after all, this interview was way more extensive than I thought. It's really cool. Thank you very much for all the insights and you have gave us about your career and also on music producing. And I just wanted to add that really looking forward to Pesa and also listen to the music. And you have to put this on vinyl or CD or something, because they have sent me this review page where you can listen in the browser. And I was like, man, I want to listen to it everywhere. So please release a soundtrack or something.
Yeah, well, there's a story behind that. They said, hey, we need a demo page for the PR guys and the reporters to take a listen. So I'm like, oh, okay. So part of my day job is creating websites, so I just put it together really quickly. It's tricky. I have released some of my music on memory sticks. I did one in the shape of the Psygnosis Owl. And that was crazy, crazy story. My God, if I'd filmed everything that had happened during that, it was just insane. That's another interview. And then on other occasions, some other USB sticks, but never an official CD of anything so far. But yeah, I'm actually talking to the guys who are the powers that be who are producing Pacer about exactly what's going to be going on with the music. It's definitely going to be on digital platform and Spotify, and I guess maybe there's a way you can do it on Steam as well. But we'll see what happens in terms of like physical releases.
I mean, vinyl LPs are doing a comeback right now. There's a lot of video game musicians that put their stuff on vinyl, and maybe that would be something interesting to you. I'm just saying, it's just a suggestion. Yeah, right? It's less.
No, it is. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I did the music for sort of a, like an indie game that was on PlayStation by a company called Just Add Water. And they were actually going to press a vinyl of my music. In fact, I looked up on the internet how you mix for vinyl because I didn't want anybody else to do it. If anyone's going to do it, I'm going to do my own music. And you have to roll off the bass. You have to make the bass mono. There's all these different things. The headroom has to be less. Yet, you know, lots of things. So I did all that, spent days. And then, we're not going to do it. So, but yeah, I definitely would love to have at least one or two of my albums on vinyl. That would be cool. I just like the whole format, the big imagery and everything.
Yeah. Maybe just to have this in your hands, this is the appeal of vinyls, I think, not because of the sound. The sound is great too, but it's having this huge disc. Now I'm listening to this, and you really take your time listening to vinyls. It's like a different form of music consumption. It's like you can put your music everywhere with your smartphone and stuff like that. And putting on a vinyl means now I'm sitting here for at least 40 minutes. If it's a longer vinyl, then I'm really listening to it because it's like reading a book. Yeah, you cannot do this while you're doing other stuff like this. You can't just listen to it occasionally in the background. You have to listen to it and you have to sit down and take your time. And I think this is something really cool about vinyls, because it's really coming back, this culture of actively listen to music. And this is why I love the format so much. Of course, it's more fragile than other formats, but it's this culture of listening that's coming back.
No, I agree with you. I was there in the vinyl age and the cassette age and the CD age and even the mini disc that was there briefly, and then the really shitty MP3 players.
Oh, I remember.
Like, why are we listening to this shit? I mean, a cassette tape that I've played 400 times in my car sounds better than this. But you had to have really low bit rates to fit all your songs on them in the memory space. So I agree. I think, and for a fact, the first play of a vinyl record is conceivably actually better quality than a CD. That first play, when the needle is shaving off a little bit of the high frequencies when it goes around, which is why they have laser ones now, so it doesn't actually touch the. But then it's like, hang on, is this really analog if it's not got a needle in there scraping along? So. Yeah.
That's right. This is also the limitation of you can't listen to it forever, man. It's like listen to it 10 times, it sounds worse. It's like you have to appreciate it, right? It's the
Each listen is an experience.
Yeah. This is really cool. So Tim, thank you very much for this interview. This was super interesting. I would love to talk more about this, but I think 1 hour already was very extensive.
Yeah.
So for the listeners, just a reminder, so Pacer is out on PC and will also be out on Xbox and PS4, I think the next couple of weeks there was some trouble with the verification process or something, but definitely this out this autumn. And of course, your music is in it, and also some other musicians, right? It's like very similar to Wipeout in terms of the music team.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of licensed acts in there as well. In fact, the number of tracks is crazy. There's a lot of music to choose from, it's quite a wide selection as well. So if you hate Cold Storage, all the power to you. Don't worry. There is other music on there. There's kind of like stuff with a drum and bass vibe. There's dubstep kind of stuff, you know, so don't panic. I guess you can have your own soundtrack as well.
So. This is really cool. So I'm really looking forward to this. We'll be playing this on Xbox later on. And Tim, thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for this interview. I really hope there will be no music from you in the future. Maybe Pacer 2 or something different.
I hope so. I mean, my backburner projects at the moment, I'm being badgered by a lot of fans. Please release the Colony Wars and the Crazy Ivan remastered to Spotify and Bandcamp and so on. So I have those to do. And a couple of new projects that may come off. We'll have to see.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Okay, cheers. Yeah, kein Problem.